today, my podcast audience, this podcast tells you about my podcast policy. Now, that sounds the words. The moment you hear policy, you think of administrations or your boss and a policy document that you haven't agreed to, and they point out and you have to follow the policy and you can't, and it's very complicated. In this case, it's more, a better word for it is, I suppose, policy. This is general guidelines. It's more a strategy and an evolving strategy of what the podcast will be about, how it'll come out, and all that type of stuff. And because it's adult to adult, I thought I'd include it with you so you know what to expect and how things will go. So there's obviously reasons for podcasting. We won't go into that. So at the moment, I've got myself trained into doing podcasts, and obviously I have podcast topics coming up, and if I think of too many of them, I get my head muddled. So I've written down around 50 podcast topics that are coming up that I'll podcast, so I don't have to really think it. As I'm reading books, I'll say, oh, look, I'll think I'll do a podcast on that down the track. So I've got this list of 50 podcasts. So rather doing a podcast and then immediately publishing it on the same day, I am in the process of getting a little bank of 10 podcasts together, and then rather than mothering each podcast through the production process, which is very, very simple, I've simplified it down. I can put that in batches of 10. And for my background in computing and robotics, I can begin to automate that. And so the aim is to get consistently 2 podcasts out a day, and attached to this particular one, which I think I'll call the Instagram of podcasting. It's really a podcast policy, but the long-range strategic evolution is to get something quite sophisticated up. And this is not some sort of grand plan. This is sort of the natural way of things. So overall, you can see that as I train myself to podcast and speak coherently and to think of topics and to structure them, there are all these different areas which I'm developing. So I'm developing the actual structure, the taking on an imagination journey, the actual tone and various aspects of it, the vocabulary, explanation of vocabulary, and bringing it together. All that structural aspects, the topic aspects of thinking that, oh, look, I'll have to, this is a big topic, I'll have to do a few podcasts leading up to it. So in order, and looking at different streams of podcasting, you need to really write out a list of podcasts, such, triage them, and feed them through the hopper. So it's done rather well. I'll do a bit of an explanation of where that's going down the track. And, of course, naturally there's, in any topic, several aspects or dimensions that you lead into it. So without further ado, this is the standard hello line. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. I suppose the first thing I'll, I've always, without consciously knowing it, operated on several levels at the same time. So people eventually listening to me say, oh, I've got it, this is why you're hard to listen to, because you've got, talk one sentence after the other, but they're on different levels, and people don't necessarily follow what you're doing. And that comes from my my sort of youth. I was very dyslexic and didn't speak till very late, and uncoordinated, because I had a cross dominant brain, which meant that I was able to had the inability of being able to think it on different levels at the same time. So it sort of came in handy when looking at maths, or just spontaneously walking up to things and solving them without really being aware of my overall, you know, why I was solving it or anything like that. So that sort of pretty well describes the journey up to this point. I suppose began realizing that there was a big gap in what children knew, but also in what was in the education system. There's a very big gap from what people felt very confident as teaching, because that was in textbooks, and what was actuality and how you covered that. And so I developed lessons, and then developed YouTubes and basically hammered away without getting the various technologies all lined up and the correct technology. The best technology I've found is Camstasia and some sort of camera called something like Logitech Pro or something like that. It's a fairly good camera, a green screen, and the ability to cut and paste images. There's a net draw program. I'm just trying to think. There's sort of half a dozen programs. There's a screen capture program called Lightshot, so you can fairly quickly get together a YouTube. And then there's other base software. I think there's a CS Nightly for timelines, to actually get together some quite complex ideas into YouTubes now. And then, of course, you've got your LabVIEW or your robotics animations, which you can put into YouTubes. So occasionally you can produce some good YouTubes. You've got a limited audience which you can capture. And so without really thinking, I automatically began converting the things that I was studying into YouTubes. And I've got a YouTube channel. And there's a few YouTubes tackle some fairly complex problems. I was interested in the complex problems of the origin of matter and mass, and in the process discovered some pretty amazing Byzantine emperors and amazing saints going in there. This is all part of the religious scientific origin of things, including a bizarre bizarre way the 8th century popes tended to knock each other off, and the origin of papal hammers and papal tools. As a physicist, I was interested in the papal hammer, which they still have, and the papal sledgehammer. There is all this type of stuff, so I found that interesting. But of course, the deeper YouTube and studying going in, that the more difficult that is to explain. There was Anastasia, the anti-pope, the librarian anti-pope. So there was just this galaxy of amazing things, and you began to realise that your audience were dealing with are brought up on soapies and on Thomas the Tank and that type of stuff. If you bring in these bizarre things, they can't tell that this is not American fiction. This is their actual history you're talking about. So that led to a direction, and then naturally to podcasting. I think I was looking at augmenting this with an Australian technology called Blurt, which allows you to rapidly produce YouTubes and comment on the YouTubes. It's a fantastic technology. And one of the things I noted was that the sound quality from my computer was really unhearable. And then they pointed out that you need good broadcasting technology. You've got naturally good broadcasting technology in your phone. Have you got such and such a phone? And I had a very old phone, and that got me into podcasting. At this stage, I had to do some cardiac walks, which, you know, is an hour or so a day, and doing nothing, walking with people, walking by yourself, and you're thinking you'd be stacking up ideas, so it was best to podcast. So that got the early version of podcasts. Looked at the overall technology, transfer technology. I'll go back in that I've designed factory process lines where you have to actually really look at the timing, the number of buttons pressed and going through. And so this had a fair number of button pressing on your mobile phone before you could transfer it to your computer. The audio quality was, I suppose, variable. It was good, but it tended to pick up traffic noise and other conversations. So I began to produce on that and get the process happening relatively quickly and begin to understand this. And then I discovered the VP10 from discussion with my brother, sort of dealing with sort of fairly complex issues, which I won't talk about here, and then the VP10 simplified things. So it's a high quality programmable dictaphone, which I'm holding at the moment. And the advantage is that at the end of it, it's got a USB port, and you can hook it up to your computer, just USB port it into your computer. And so that means a whole series of things will eventually happen as that goes through. Then at the same time, I'm looking at voice to print transcripts looked. So this is where you speak, and it produces a written transcript of what you've written. And so this is very important in long-term automation. And I discovered the standout software which produces it is Google's artificial intelligence in YouTube. It produces amazingly accurate translations, being able to pick up Australian accents and various things. And there's a Google API which is just mind-blowingly difficult to access. Now, in the meantime, people have listened to the way I've gone through molecular physics and stuff like that. I've just looked at something, and essentially the problem over time has melted away. I haven't been quite aware how I've solved it. And this, in my case, when I was employed in something, a company which was eventually bought by Nortel, there was a time where I programmed up a robot on a process, and I'd done it on the train and fallen asleep during it and woken up completing it. And they said, "How did you do it?" And I said, "I do not have a memory of how I've done it. You have to believe me." And of course they didn't. But this is very much true for producing the iTunes channel. And so this is very much the process that I'm going through now, and you're involved in as a listener. The research thing where you're just in the lab and you produce a few things. So there's emerging three different channels to market. There's the iTunes, which is a complete flop. So there's an iTunes channel, I mentioned the basically sleep. I went through the processes of just setting up the iTunes channel and wasn't fully awake and aware, and then next day it was there. I really can't remember how I set up iTunes. But there's also the Feedburner channel, people look at that feed, the RSS feed, and I've written computer programs which generate RSS feeds, so I know how to produce it and publish it and set up feeds. And then there's the blogger, there's a general process which I'll eventually go to. So there's that aspect. I should I'll stop at this point and actually. Okay, so just to recap, I'll be releasing two podcasts a day from a library of podcasts and producing them in batches efficiently. So this allows me to, if I have to break off and do things, I'm in a rehab stage, and I know that I'll to produce this, I'll have to have this as an automated background process. Now, this is the process. I'll stop now and say that I went through a cleansing process of the last year and a bit, and that this is sounds ghoulish. This is basically about to die. That sounds really emotional, but it's got some surprising aspects. So I suppose one of the sort of surprising processes as you sort of running towards the end, you sort of realise that, but there's this surprising thing that it's not all people being nice to you. There's the sort of the angry people are still there, and they're almost they're not good people. what can I say? The end process of it is you say, I'm at the end. It's turned out that, you know, people are really bad at the end of it. It sounds emotional, but on the other aspect, I said, I've had this amazing life. I've understood these things, a lot of quantum physics and maths, and I'm sure other people have understood them, but I've just never in my life actually gone up to another person and met someone else who's understood them. But on the other aspect, I've seen some amazing things. So I have seen some optical fibers, lasers, more amazing things, I think, a physical phenomena which are just jaw-dropping. If you know what should happen and what, when they amazingly happen in the lab. So I've had these amazing things and been able to track them down and eventually wear them down and work out what's going on. And so I thought I've had this amazing life. And then you go through your first heart surgery, wake up and your brain slowly switches on. And of course, you explain to you later that, you know, that fogginess of things switching on, that's because you are heavily drugged. But you wake up, and sort of the last part of your personality to set up is that sort of defensive sort of dealing with the outside world and stuff. And you get used to sort of the natural way you operate with all these different levels thinking forward, and then sort of be more aware of this multi-level. I think it's sort of, I'd call it more a mesh way of thinking, where you have different topics to think about, or you just store away. You actually don't physically think about it, so you can hear it, and then it comes to you a bit later. I'm sure when I speak to people, they say, "Look, we do that all the time." There was a book called "The Incredible Way That That People Actually Learn: The Surprising Truth About How People Learn," and in terms of basically all the stock standard belief of setting things out clearly and not leaving any disturbing, you know, you've got to present everything right so that people understand immediately, is actually the least efficient way of learning. If people are saying there's something wrong, there's this innate ability of humans to spot a twig which is on the wrong position, a bird which is misbehaving, and to start to really think about their process off, because that, at the end of the day, means a meal. For the intelligent chimps out in the jungle, this means a meal. You can basically put people to sleep by having the knowledge too well set up. So that's, I suppose, the basis, and then I've begun podcasting and gradually looking at the metrics and looking at the way things go go forward. So just in summary, we've got the two podcasts today, put through the moving forward to a process. Now, I've got sort of a... I would say I'm an up-to-date robotics scientist in terms of being able to manipulate the software tools I do have around at me. I'm definitely, it's been about more getting on 20 years since I did an MBA study, so I've got this business process re-engineering approach to look at the process, and I've definitely applied the lessons I learnt in my MBA into industry, making more efficient processes. And so that MBA efficient process thing, I have a long-term view. And now we'll sort of talk about the overall processes which I'm going for. For people without an IT background, this will be a bit more difficult to understand. The sort of first generation of automation that I did, getting a robot and a computer system to operate a whole different set of software, is using, the platform is still there, the ActiveX X platform, where you've got methods and I've got the various sets of things where you can pass, set up a program on a computer. So we're used to accessing a program by a keyboard. You can access it as a application in a subroutine in your program. Sort of initiate the program and start passing variables to it and variables out of it. So you can produce Word documents or take over a scanner or do all sorts of things. So this is within the Microsoft soft world. So this has got some relevance. If you can find a Microsoft program, you can use the ActiveX container and sort of other programs which are well written. You can use an ActiveX container and computer and robotics software to manipulate it. And definitely anything DOS on the file system. So this means that down the track you can sort of very, very simply have a program in the background monitoring all the time and monitors the moment that you plug in your VP10. It'd be nice if it had a Bluetooth, it came into wireless range, but that's probably further down the track. So it plugs in, the moment you plug it in, you don't press any buttons, the computer automatically checks and bring up the files. And now at this stage, down the track, so that's easily done. And just to explain, there's that, and then there's proprietary software which you can buy, like email it in, which you send emails to an email address, and it will then automatically send files to the appropriate strip it and send files to your Google Drive. So there's a whole lot of there's things where you can address. I really have to, can't quite remember how it's done, but I can write robotic programs which send emails. So sort of that email interface is a pretty amazing interface. And from my robotics factories, which I worked on, I'd set up a network of independent robots or agents, and they'd be able to work out on the maths that they were operating on, if one robot was or one thing was taken out, the process would automatically adapt and start on doing something else. Of course, there was a safety lock, a lock for it, because you could switch off one robot, but the other robot would work it out and start working on. There's a a documentary on it. And fortunately, the robots would announce what they're doing, verbally announce what they're doing for it. And so you could cut the data cable into one from one source, and it would work out and get the data through a different, an amazingly circuitous route. This is not any. This is not artificial intelligence. This is just bots. And so, in class, I would have my. So I had worked on Moodle in class, and I sort of decided that that was a lot of hard work getting people to sign into Moodle and the administration costs. So as soon as I heard Moodle, I got into it in a month or so, and began organising international classes, so my class and a class in Peru and stuff like that. So that's one of the great advantages of the Moodle platform. It's run in all countries. So, but this case in my class, I think I had something called Mr. Catbox. You had to email your work to Mr. Catbox, and what would happen is the file would be ultimately taken, added to your portfolio of work, marked, and an email would be sent back to you thanking you for it. And this is just a teaching interface, which was just purely email, but they'd be able to see Mr. Catbox. I think I had a actual cat speaking. I forgot how that was done. But what had happened is it was being run off my computer at home, and someone pulled the plug out for it to do some vacuuming or something like that. And I said, "Oh, well, that's the problem." End of the class. And then 5 minutes later, Mr. Catbox came back. And of course, what I had is I had several bots set up, and one was mothering the other, checking it was working, and once it stopped working, it stepped in and rebuilt itself. And because it was all only operating off Google Drive and stuff like that, it was able to just take over as if there's no problem. And so this is essentially what I'll eventually go to. So ideally, I'd like to be able to, in a podcast, say, title such and such, byline such and such, that be taken off, processed, the transcripts taken, and I think already there's an email to Blogger version, and that be automatically set up, ready to go. And then obviously there's an advantage to that I'm not the only expert out there plugging away. There's lots of other experts out there. It'd be nice if we could develop this, hopefully, amazingly. Wouldn't it be amazing if I got help from Google or some other place to implement it? And so eventually we could organize it on top. And of course, I should say with the... they were called fembots because I tried to describe it to a reporter who came into the factory, and they took the wrong aspect of cooperative working, and they set things up. But the actual basis of that is on a the structuring of that that robotics was on a very small manipulation of the way operators went around, the way numbers went around operators. I won't describe it, but there's a sort of similar discovery which I'll eventually be right down the track, a long way down the track, get the podcast to automatically go into an app, so you can press on a button in an app. So I've already got this up. I've already got the... And again, that's a different area of maths, which I'll discuss. And now what's happened is that I've gone through the veil of nearly being wiped out and then coming back to life, quite literally coming back to life, courtesy of this amazing technology they've implanted in my heart. So I have a little shutter valve in my heart. You'd recognise it because it looks like the shutter valve of a V1 or a slightly different structure. So it's amazing. It clicks like a Swiss watch. And I have this a whole series of things happening in terms of a limited rehab time before I'm put under the microscope again, sort of to say, look, are you a normal teacher? Unfortunately, I have to say, no, I'm not. So it's, I think what I'll be able to do, I'm definitely up to the moment of the 50 in the hopper, 10 ready to go, 2 per day, I can, and process that, and that's not a big effort, and it gives the flexibility, so that's what will come through. Some of the things that will be done is that if you go to this blog page, this blog page will have a very short list of the podcast of the policy or strategy behind it, but then it'll have a synopsis of the podcasts coming up soon, and then they will disappear and go forward. And the aim is to do to minimise the number of keystrokes in producing a podcast, and that's only one aspect. That's the mechanical aspect of producing a large volume of podcasts, and obviously you want to eventually get into a situation where you can actually entrain other experts from around the world to talk about their stuff to kids or to teachers and to start it off. So that's a long-term, there's several long-term strategies. The IT strategies, there's the expansion strategy, and there's my personal strategy of analysing several podcasts and analysing a basic appropriate training or development that I should do to improve it. And one of the things is that writing scripts and doing a lot of timely pre-production obviously will produce something much more listenable, but this is for a quality commercially usable podcast, for something where you've got 50 podcasts that you're in the hopper that you're looking at. You simply, the opportunity cost and the production process is done with it. Although they're very good, the actual time involved in, say, printing things out, I think I should put a few things out, because I basically in my head think, I'll do a podcast on that, and so without thinking, I'll start automatically getting some of the information together. I won't check ahead of time, do I remember the actual physical term, or can I pronounce that? I'm not asking those questions, so I often embarrass myself by going, the word's on the top of my head, I've got the image of it, and so I have to apologise for that in advance, and I've learnt to go through it. That's sort of given you a bit of the background. There are these techniques. To be quite honest, I have forgotten how I have programmed my computer to take an email out. One of the things I am struggling with is that I've got some pretty out of date LabVIEW software. There's some more up to date LabVIEW software, which would be good to have. So I've sort of engineered my way around some out of date software using some pretty heavy techniques. So although I use a commercial program to upload these podcasts to the internet, I've written other programs which manages the FTP, and be honest, I can't remember how I've written those, but that actually, the programs I've written at the moment takes an app which the computer has written based on your input. It will listen to your input, write an app, and then upload that as a web app, and it will upload that piece by piece, checking every piece, and that does it in more a minute or so. So you put in some points. So there's some pretty advanced stuff that is out there, and I'd like to put it all together and produce it, and actually produce sort of a professional teaching podcast world. At this stage, I'm progressing to a standard number of podcasts out, and minimising. I'm doing things manually by keystrokes, and eventually I'll bit by bit write software so that it may seem only small things that when you put in your VP 10, it automatically opens it up. Then it's going to be a huge slog fest to actually go through with the Google API. It sounds like nightmare material to me to go through and actually text to speech, convert your speech, so I can actually just get the VP10, which I'm speaking to at the moment, and take that, and then that will produce the overall written content and the actual audio content divided up like that, because you also get the timing, eventually push it through. A lot of the software out there, will be interesting if it's got an ActiveX container. I think this is NCH software, which I use to compress the audio file, so they're just not embarrassing. And it's amazing, by doing this, I've been doing basically podcasts to text, to say I want to record file notes on a day or an incident, so I'll just podcast for an hour and then podcast to text. But it's a hard process to go through. So that's the overall thing. And at the end of this, you'll see, if you go on this, be advised, don't listen to it unless you're really interested in the podcasting policy. And but also in this, the blog for this, I'll have the text of some future podcasts that I'm coming up with. So thanks for listening. I hope this makes sense overall. Bye.